Blog Talk Radio.
There he is.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
I'm on.
Okay. Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2695. That's 2695. Tonight we're going to have a special show, and I'm glad that Michelle has called in. Michelle Bless from Ohio. Of course, she's an author, she's a minister, and we're together on Thursday nights once a month. And she decided she was going to call in tonight, and I'm really thankful she did. And Bill is here also. He's the founder of NASCA, and we're waiting for our guest, and so far she hasn't called in. But I will tell you a little something about her because I do know her. Her name is Dr. Deborah Warner. And she is, she's a NASCA family member for sure. And she's also a Los Angeles-based forensic psychologist and a professor at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Okay. And she's going to help lead the discussion tonight. Now, Dr. Deb will be with us to do this episode about the Scripps Conference. She wants to speak about the Scripps Conference. And that's something that takes place once a year in July, and I believe it's in California, if I remember correctly. Yeah, it is California, and it's free. And this is really for the males, too. I mean, it's for everybody, don't get me wrong. But Dr. Deborah goes into prisons, and she speaks to the men, and she goes other places and speaks and works with men and so forth. So this is actually a Scripps Conference, but you're going to learn an awful lot at that Scripps Conference, if you should happen to be in the area, about, you know, sexual abuse that happens to little boys and how it affects their adulthood and so forth and so on. And then, of course, it can be a very negative thing if they do not get the help that they need. So, anyway, I see a 951 area code here. I'm going to, maybe it's her. Dr. Deborah, yes, it is. I see you.
How are you?
How you doing?
Good.
How you doing? Good.
I'm good.
Yeah, I was just talking about you, but I was saying all good things.
Oh, well, that's good.
I was telling the people about the Scripps Conference and you know, explaining how you work with the male population usually. I mean, I'm sure you work with everyone, but I'm just saying. And how you go into the prison system and so forth and work the prisoners and talk to them. And just exactly, you know, what you do. But this is your show, and I want you to tell us a little bit about what you're doing, and we'll get into it from there. Go ahead.
Oh, goodness. I'm doing lots of things, but I just did a table read for the Asian Discrimination Panel that will be the pre-conference on July 9th for Scripps. And we're talking about microaggressions and everything that's been going on since COVID-19 and how these issues were there, that it you know, COVID-19 just kind of set them off. And this year's conference on July 16th and 17th on Scripps is about leadership and trying to make change, you know, regarding a lot of these issues. And, you know, it's amazing that I have such a lineup this year, from the FBI to, you know, the sheriffs. Also, we have community organizations that will be there this year, from Men Healing and everything. And I, you know, I heard you say it's a male survivor trauma conference, and it is, but that's how we got started. And it really encompasses mm-hmm. everything having to do with diversity and creating change for survivors of trauma. And I love that it really has grown into its own. And I mean, this year we had so many submissions, you know, and it is going to be an amazing, amazing conference.
Well, that's good. That's wonderful. We need more conferences like that, Deborah, you know, because quite frankly, men are starting to really, really come forward now. We know this, whether it be through the church or whether it be through the Boy Scouts, things that we know of that's we've gotten knowledge finally, you know, that they too, you know, are abused as children, and they too are going to go through the same things that women go through, or a person who hasn't had, you know, any help of any kind, they're going to have their problems just like we do, all right? And so many men are starting to come forward now. And that is such a, I'm just so happy about that. I really am. And, of course, maybe you can talk a little bit about your life because you are an author and why you wrote the book as you did. I mean, you know, speak a little bit about your book. You have here His Story, Her Story. That's the name of your book.
His History.
Yeah, I'll change my glasses. Wait a minute. Oh, my God. Okay, it's funny. His History, Her Story. Okay, we've got it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your book and what even motivated you to do the type of work that you're doing?
You know, what really motivated me was, you know, because my husband went through this, but really I wanted to make change. I wanted to make change in this world, and I wanted people to understand a lot of the stuff they do causes a lot of things for other people, you know, and it causes things for people that they need to realize that their behaviors need to be checked. And also for people to go through life without healing is no place to be, you know, and I do all of this because this is what God told me to do. I actually just launched my own university today, the Listen and Love University online, and one of the courses is on male survivor trauma, and there's one on corporate trauma, and there's one on looking at organizations using animals because my son helped me create that book. But I also launched my cookbook that is coming out, and that is Make It or Bake It. I wrote that with my daughter. And a Spanish version of my book, His History, Her Story, this year. So there's quite a lot of literature, but if people really, really, really want to go read it, they can go to Dr. Deborah's Things and More on Amazon because I have my own store there, and they can buy all kinds of stuff from script goodies to my books to other resources.
That's wonderful. Well, you've been busy this year, huh?
I have been very, very busy this year.
Yes, you have. And that's amazing, too, because with all the COVID problems, you know, it's hard for a lot of us to do what we usually do. But you've kept it going. You know, you have yourself totally together, and you've expanded upon what you already do. And so that's great. I love it. I love it. So what would you like to talk about tonight? I mean, with the script conference coming up, it's coming up, you know, soon. And what we usually do before the script conference comes up is you do give people a little more background as to what to expect, where it is, the location, how to get there, so forth. Or maybe they can look that up. I don't know.
The script conference, they can go to thescriptconference.com and they can sign up. Thescriptconference.com, and you can go in there and get your ticket, look at the schedule, and find out all the information they need about the conference. It is going to be amazing this year. We have over 235 people already registered. People need to, you know, sign up now because soon we are going to be full.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the months are going by so fast. I lost track of June. I didn't realize that it was so, yeah, I'm not the only one. Maybe something's messing with my mind. I don't know. But all of a sudden I was putting the wrong dates down. I go, holy Christopher, you know, June is over. I mean, it's already July, and July will go so quickly, and then August. And then my favorite time of the year, the fall. I love the fall. Yes, I do. But anyway, you know, I never even talked about NASCA and our mission statement. You know, I really should read that just for the people maybe tonight who haven't tuned into NASCA, and then we'll get back to you. Just give me this one second.
Okay.
We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And then number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, I'm very heavy on prevention. I believe if there was more education out there, Dr. Deborah, I'm sure that you would agree with this. We need to educate, educate, educate. The more we educate people, especially those from the normie homes, because the ones who are the abusers, okay, the abusers, they wouldn't take interest in this, all right? But, and that's unfortunate, you know, that there is that situation. But we do know that so many kids are abused right inside their home, and that's a horrific thing. I was one. We have someone else on the panel here. She was another. And there's so many, many. It was 10 to 20%. I read that last night. I do my research. 10 to 20% of children are abused right inside of the home. And the 20% especially. And it said approximately, so it could be higher. And then, of course, you have all the outside abuse, too. So if we could teach our children more about what to look for in people who are going to abuse them, teach them, about their bodies, the right touch, the wrong touch, all that. We speak about that, but that's not nearly enough anymore. And I'm sure you'll agree with that. And the bathing suit area, people, instead of saying the breasts or the penis, they're still, very shy in that sense. I've noticed that in presentations. So I will use the bathing suit area just so I can be heard, okay? But we can use that. That's okay. And to educate the parents to do role-playing amongst themselves, make it a part of parenting. Make it a part of parenting. Because if you do that, we teach our children across the street properly. We teach them all kinds of things. But we have to teach them how to keep themselves safe and what things that they can look for. And to have that open communication between the parents and the child. And so people always say, well, Carol, what year do we start that at? The child will let you know, too, because when you're bathing your child, a lot of times they'll say, Mom, what's this? Mom, what's that? Or Dad, what's this? What's that? Okay. And you explain, but in an appropriate way, age appropriate, what it is. And as children grow, continue to have that conversation with them. And when they have even more understanding and more learning, they'll know that they can go to Mommy and Daddy and they will be heard. See, that's the thing. They will be heard. So I teach a lot about that because it's so important. And, Dr. Deborah, there's so many parents out there that say the wrong thing because they say, I want my child to be innocent as long as they can be. I hear that a lot. And then I have to say to them, we don't live in an innocent world because that's the truth. Now, we know that there's so many children out there, even as we're speaking, that are being abused right now. And if those kids don't get help along the way as they're growing up, if they don't tell and if they don't get the proper help, a lot of times they end up in trouble or even worse. We know this. So when I run a show or when I do my presentations or whatever I'm doing or talks with people, maybe not inside of the big part of the college or whatever, the universities, I usually speak in two. And so other times I want to get more into the women's groups because they're supposedly, and I want to say supposedly, they come from the background of a normie home, supposedly. So I want to, expand a little bit and let people get more information about how to teach their children and why they should. And they're actually doing them no service at all if they don't teach them. Now, I don't want to tell your story, about your husband. That's not what this is about. But please feel free, to expand upon what you were saying before, you know, why you're working with men and a little bit about what you want to talk about with your husband, because we know he is a survivor. We can say that.
Yeah, I mean, my husband is a survivor of multiple, of, you know, sexual abuses from many different people. But my story, you know, the book is really about my story and my journey in dealing with that and how I cope and how in that journey I realized that there was a lot of people that I could help because I was very isolated and alone, you know, due to that. And so I realized that I had a thing for working with males and male survivors of trauma, and I went into the prisons and started working with survivors that I found in there. And in that, there was one thing that I heard constantly is that I'm not believed or people don't hear me or, you know, and I'm like, people hear you. So that's why I created Script. I created Script to sort to be loud and clear that there's one person who hears you. I created an entire conference dedicated to you so that I can say, I hear you. And in doing that, I got all these other people who come and now say that they hear you. And we have people, you know, we have, I think, oh my goodness, there's 8 hours a day. There's at least, there's over 35 presentations, at least. And there's over 65 presenters, you know, and each one has a Q&A. And we have people talking about fitness. We have people talking about just self-discovery and coping skills, microaggressions. I mean, there's so many different things that it's happening at Script, and it's because this is what I was told to do. This is what God wanted me to do. And I do, I'm obedient, you know. And every time I'm obedient, I get blessed, and I bless other people. And that's what I live for, is blessing other people. It's not really for me. It's blessing other people and helping them, you know, feel healed, you know. So, I mean, my story is really about wanting other people to feel whole, and because I was not whole, because I realized it's not just what happened to my husband. Somehow I wasn't whole because I'm in this relationship feeling lost. And what can I do to feel whole that would help him feel whole, you know? And so it was really a journey. And if you read my book, it's not just about the abuse. It's about what you can do to heal yourself, what to look for. It's a guide for spouses that are in the situation. It's a guide for clinicians to help to treat it, but it's my story woven in as the example of why it would work or help. And if you go to my course, I have an online course now that you can go to. I just launched it today that you can go to, and you actually hear me take you step by step through the book so that you learn how to apply all of this knowledge into your life.
That's excellent. That's excellent. I like that. Let me go to Michelle Bluss, because she had called in first, and then we'll go down to Bill, our founder. And let me see. I know she's busy right this second, Michelle. Michelle, are you there?
I am here.
I am here.
Hello. I'm going to say hello to the guests. I just wanted to say that when she was mentioning about the prisons and stuff, that I am a chaplain for the state of Ohio prisons. And I go into the prisons, I deal with the women, but I also deal with the men's side. And when I sit in one-on-one with them, it's really, really sad when they share their story. And I always tell people that if you take your time and listen to their story, don't look at the fact of what they've done and they're locked up behind bars, but understand that they went through some sort of trauma as a child that led them into their teenage years to rebel and to become an adult, and tragically had them end up in prison. And so that's what I do. Everybody has a story. And sometimes, you know, the men that went through such trauma, they medicate. Medicate with what? Medicate with drugs, medicate with rebellion, medicate with whatever, because they're hurting, you know. And so I just want to say that, and I'm glad that you're here, and I'm looking forward to hearing more of your story and what you do.
Well, I remember you. You called in on NASCO, and I used to do the Q&A on Tuesdays. Yes! You were fabulous,
okay.
And you're fabulous now.
Wow.
That's right. That's right.
Okay,
there you go.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, you see, you two both, and myself, actually, but I worked with the juvies, all right? And they grow into what you worked with because they then turn into adults, right? And they still haven't gotten the help that they need. And then they end up in prison. So we all have something in common. And by working with the juvenile delinquents, they need so much more. They need so much more help. And then they wouldn't get, maybe, just maybe, to the point where they'd end up in the prison, you know, system. And they wouldn't be so much into the drugs and the alcohol. This amazes to me, alcohol and drugs. I met a professor very, very mad one time, I don't care, when I was going to school. And they had sent me to Princeton, and I didn't want to go because I was still having panic attacks. So I took my flask with me. Oh, yes, I did. They didn't know that. But I was having such panic. So I would take a couple of glug glugs before I realized I was an alcoholic. And then I'd feel better, and I'd go into class, and I'd do fine. Had no problems. But I made this professor really angry, and I didn't know if I was going to get certified because of that. People, they out there, they think if that all you do is drink compared to, you know, like shooting up drugs and, or snorting or whatever you're going to do to pop pills, they always consider alcohol to be the least, you know, the least offender, okay? And I've got news for you. If you drink enough alcohol, you end up with a wet brain. And doctor, you know what I'm talking about. Of course, Michelle, you know what I'm talking about.
Of course.
You know. So, I mean, anything that alters the way a person thinks is a drug. Let's face mm-hmm. it. So whether it be, and, you know, I was getting so mad at him because I came from an alcoholic environment, very, very rough alcohol environment, and a lot of bloodshed. And I'm thinking to myself, stupid people, because, you see, they weren't popping pills or shooting up heroin or snorting. They were drinking. And they behaved in that manner. So anything that alters the brain, okay, is a drug. So these kids, if they could be, you know, gotten a hold of out of these terrible homes that, like, I came from, Michelle, I know, did also, and a lot of people on NASCA, then if they could be worked with, then maybe they wouldn't turn into, I was a juvenile delinquent for quite some time before I got straightened out. And I told my story finally at the age of 30. And the Catholic Church was actually a good Catholic church, and it had a prayer group. And those people came from all walks of life, they were all walks of life, and they had psychologists there. And they grabbed a hold of me and said, you're a mess. And I said, yes, I am. And they worked with me. And they made me what I do today, because at one time I could never even talk about anything on the phone. That's how panic. I didn't have just panic attacks. I had panic disorder, and I needed help. So this is what happens. These guys that you're working with, it affects them one way or another. You know, maybe they don't have panic attacks, but maybe it affects them, you know, with their behavior. It becomes behavioral then. And, you know, in that sense, then if it becomes behavioral, then they go out and they do commit crimes. Many times they're suffering still from PTSD, and they don't even know it. So that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let me put Bill on, because he is the founder, and we gals are having a good time talking here. So you're a guy. Talk. Go ahead, Bill.
I don't have any special perspective on this, being a guy. I don't think guys have we have to be encouraged to talk, and that's the biggest thing, I think, with guys, mm-hmm. because we tend to hold on to the secrets and so forth, thinking we have to deal with it by ourselves. It's part of, as Carol says, the macho thing. But, you know, other than that, if we can be encouraged to come forward and open our mouths, you know, I agree with Deborah that, you know, we started the script conference focused on men, but it turns out that it's the same focus for women too. So, you know, it's not a specialty thing for men. You know, child abuse is a especially sexual child abuse, is rampant, and it's pervasive. It's worldwide. In our country, it's basically in every community has it, and almost every street has somebody that's been abused. So there's a lot of work to do. The Script Conference, I'll just say, is something I love. I've been to many of them. I think I've been to all of them. I'm not sure. But this year, again, it's going to be held on Zoom, which for the first time it was done last year. Otherwise, it's been in person for 2 days. And it's wonderful when it's in person. But I was surprised, to be honest, Deborah, how well it went forward as on the Zoom platform last year. But it's amazing, you know, when you have a room with 400 people in it, but it actually worked. and it's free. I mean, she says get a ticket. That's misleading to people because you don't pay anything. You're essentially making a kind of a reservation, and getting on a mailing list, I guess, but there's no cost. So don't be afraid on that regard. And then you can also, you know, these are all day long. Carol, I think you remember this. They start at 9 in the morning and they go to 5. And, if you're an all day long event, people can come in and out and they can look at the schedule of what's coming up and say, well, I'm not too interested in this and this and that, but in an hour from now, there's something I want to be sure I hear, you know. So you can go back and forth. And I totally encourage it. I think it's a wonderful event. And, NASCA is, behind it 100% and has been all along. You'll see our logo on the front page of the Script Conference website. I'll be there. And I love Dr. Deborah very much. And I'll always support her. So,
of course,
thanks, Carol.
She will.
Thanks, Deborah.
Of course she will, because you can't get rid of me.
Gosh. Well, that's good.
Nor would I want
and,
to.
No, you wouldn't. No, you have a very special friendship, and that's very good. I've watched this Script Conference grow. I've watched it grow over the years, okay? And I'm always the one that, usually on a Friday night, I guess, I don't know. But I'm usually the one that, hosts the show. So I find it very interesting. And then when we have the actual show, of course, when it was in person, that was so good because Bill would go around and he would interview people as they would come out of workshops and so forth. And they would talk and speak about what the workshop was about. And that's so important to have these workshops. I was a part of Crime Victims Week for 5 years over at Centenary. Now DIFAS has taken that over, Bill. They got a grant. Yeah. So I don't think they're going to have any more speakers there, myself included, because DIFAS wanted it. But I've heard from certain people, kids, they sure wish I was back. But anyway, that's all right. The point is this, I find something else, but the point is this, it's very, very important to have conferences like this. And I'm noticing year after year that with your conference that you have, that is growing in number, which means that there's more interest, there's more awareness, there's more people who want to learn. Maybe there is a lot of people who are victims themselves, and it gives them more insight. Whatever workshop they go to, as to why they're feeling like they're feeling, why they do the things that they do behaviorally, okay, and go from there. It probably helps people maybe even heal a little bit. I would think so. And I like the fact of your book because you said it's like a step-by-step thing that people can go to. I like books like that. It's like a workshop book. You have that.
Yeah, it really is a guide. And if people want to take the online course, I'm also just for Bill, and I'm going to make a coupon. It's called Script 10, where people can get 10% off. if they want to go and take the course and get the book. And they can just go either to Think It Fix, the Listen and Love University, or they can go to my website, drdeborahwarner.net, because there's a lot of things there that people can use to help them, even just as clinicians. And the Spanish book is in my Dr. Deborah's Things and More store, and it's for I translated it because my husband is Hispanic, which was neat, but also for the Spanish-speaking population, I found out they're using the book in Puerto Rico already. And so I needed to translate this book so it would, the language would match, you know, so because I felt bad that they were trying to figure out how to do that themselves, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's a definite need. And it's always good that if you can have it, you know, in Spanish with so many, you know, Hispanic people in our country. And we won't go there with some of the other stuff. But anyway, the point is this. It's always good to have it in two different languages. My book was actually written in Japanese. I went to look up my book to see how it was doing. And I saw all these squiggle marks. What the heck is that? Squiggle marks, because you know they don't write like we do. So then up above it said Japanese. So the book was written in Japanese. It was written in Japanese also. So, you know, our books do get out there. Absolutely. My book was written a long time ago, still selling. So, you see, that shows, that's good. You know, Dr. Deborah, let me tell you something. In 2008, I first wrote my book. And the first book company I was with, Book Surge, they wanted me to make a trailer. I had to give them $1,400. They were thinking about making a movie out of it. But their attorneys got a hold of it, their legal department. Now, this is 2008. And they said that that book was too volatile, and they didn't want to handle it. So they gave me my money back. They were honest. And I was getting lots of royalties through them. And then I got picked up by Author House. And it was rewritten and all this stuff in 2010. And they were in a lot of mucho grande, okay, problems because they were not giving out, they were not giving people, you know, the monies that had they had coming to them. There was a class action suit. So you'll look that up in the Better Business Bureau and you'll see that. So I always warn people, you know, stay away from that company because they're not on the up and up. But the point is, between 2000, I'll say 10, and now, there's so many people that are more, you know, into, they're open-minded, where they will listen at least, and, you know, they're starting to hear our voice. They're starting to really hear our voice. They just simply are. And that's a very, very important thing. I guess it started first with Hollywood. I was going to have that guy on from Friends, David Brenner. Is that his last name? Something like that. David something. I can't remember. But he was he was one of the head movie stars on that, head stars. And I spoke to him personally. But unfortunately with him, he was only interested in the people in Hollywood who had been abused. It was like he had his own foundation. And it was only for those of Hollywood. Well, okay, word got out. People started talking. You started seeing things on TV. And on it goes. And now today, there is much more awareness than there was certainly way back before Friends, okay, 2010, and before I wrote my book. So there is hope. So now what we need now is more action. It's like, okay, I understand what you're saying, but then it stops, it drops. You know, we need people who care more and also people who know what to do. And that's why I think it's very, very important, you know, very, very important to, absolutely important to tell our children, you know, to educate our children. Because pedophiles do not like, they absolutely do not like children who are educated. They know what to do if someone comes towards them. Someone approaches them.
Yeah, they do
them.
Not. They do not like children who are educated. They don't want a problem. They want someone they can groom. And that is the big difference in this whole situation. And that's why you have to not talk to your kids like, you know, down to them. You have to talk to them and be clear and straight with them, you know, because if you do that, then you're really going to curtail a pedophile who wants to do harm to your child.
Absolutely. And, you know, if children are spoken to and if they're not taught properly, this can happen time after time after time. It can. I mean, maybe they pick up, you know, hints along the way of what I should do and what I shouldn't do, what to look for, what not to look for. But if they don't have their adult parents, their parents sitting down talking to them, or those who are their guardians talking to them and explaining things to them, they can walk into the same trap the second time and the third time until all of a sudden, whoa, they realize this is what I have to watch out for. Well, they learned the hard way. And that's what we're trying so hard with the parents to teach them so that these poor kids don't have to learn at all, okay? I mean, they can be taught, but they don't have to do it the hard way like so many of us have done. So it's really, it's subject matter. It's something that needs to be, you know, out there. I can't even tell you how many kids are, you know, abused each year because the stats change. Okay, but we do know that a third of them, maybe two-thirds of them, they don't even tell. They keep their mouths shut because they're so scared. They've been threatened. I was told that I'd get killed if I told. I did tell, though. I told. But there were problems after that because of a poor family environment, okay? And but the point is there will be those children that will be told who can learn and be more careful. A pedophile does not want attention drawn to him or her. We don't speak enough about the women, okay? There's not as many women pedophiles as there are men pedophiles, but the number is pretty close. That can be teachers. Anywhere children go, they go. And a lot of times they align their work with working with children, so they have easy access. This is what they do. So we have to teach our children all kinds of things. And I remember I was over this guy's house one year, I was a teenager, and this kid came walking in. He was strutting. And then the father said to him, what's going on, son? What's going on? And he had a pretty teacher. And the pretty teacher was giving him a tremendous amount of attention. And she was flirting with him, and he was flirting with her. And I'll never forget this. He slapped the kid on the back and said, attaboy, attaboy. So people don't realize. They don't realize that that teacher was going after that age bracket. And she was actually, you know, making passes at him. So, you know, kids have to be careful. They have to be taught. They have to be taught. What do you think, Bill? You're awfully quiet.
I think it's one of the primary things that we ought to talk about sort of all year long, but This is what's called prevention, and prevention is the teaching of children. But I think you start from the earliest age, from the point they start to talk and crawl around. You know, you just be honest with them and you tell them these things. They're not as shocked as you would think they would be when you do it from that state, from that age, and then add things appropriately as you move forward. This is not, you know, ruining the innocence of your child. This is protecting the life of your child, you know, and you know, that's what it's about. So we have a lot of emphasis on that and on intervention, which is what teaching adults to look for in children around them that could be suspicion of child abuse going on in that child's life, and then what to do about it. So this is, you know, a big part of what we talk about, prevention and intervention. And then, of course, the third thing is recovery. And really, that's all NASCA does. It's one of those things. We either promote the concepts of child abuse and trauma from child abuse. In other words, teach people, educate people, or we offer help to each other. And you know, it's really pleasing to see that it's caught on, and it's not going to go anywhere now. I know that. Speaking of script, I've been going to script so long that people have gotten to know me who didn't know me at all. Some people have got to know me and said, oh, you're the one with the website, blah, blah, blah. And then, I've run into people who I did know, but I didn't know what they looked like or who they were. And this, it's kind of a little community grows up. And I want to say that's what it takes. You know, you need to have some contacts and some community. And, of course, NASCA is that. We have a big community of survivors helping each other and survivor professionals and professionals like Dr. Deborah. And we're just there for one reason. That's to help somebody else get over or get through what we've recently dealt with ourselves and to hold somebody's hand as they go through that, figuratively speaking, is, you know, a real pleasure to, when they get it, when they succeed, when they start to heal, and you're part of that, and you see that over time, it's really pleasing. So, there you go, Carol.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Dr. Deborah, I don't know if we're going to have a show after the script conference. See, this is all different now. I don't know if we're ever going to get back to normal again with all the trouble in the world. But a lot of times you guys actually speak about, you know, what happened, you know, or what happened at the script conference. I remember last year Bobby went with you, right? He was there, Bill. And and also, too, I was Deborah there? I don't remember. Deborah Hunt? I don't remember if she was there or not.
No.
I don't remember. She might have.
Not last
no,
year.
No, she wasn't. Oh, okay.
Well, last
I know
year
at
was
times.
A Zoom meeting, okay? But she wasn't.
Oh, that's
at
right. Yes,
so
it wouldn't have been
Bobby.
Last year.
By the way,
yeah.
Let me just say, I've been looking for Bobby Hyde. I can't find him, Dr. Deb.
You've been looking for
him? For Bobby Hyde.
Oh, he just
afraid
wrote me.
Something. What?
He wrote me recently.
Oh, thank God. I was afraid he'd succumb to COVID, and how would I know? I've left him repeated phone calls through, you know, last fall and so forth, and emails, a couple of emails, too. No response. All right, so I'm glad he's there. Okay, great.
Well, that's good, yeah. I was speaking about him the other day, to another NASCA family member, because I was concerned. And she said that she didn't hear anything about him either. It was like he disappeared off the face of the earth, and that's what we were afraid of, you know. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because now we know at least that he's okay. And I think that wasn't a gunshot. No. See how my mind works? Okay. She said that he's more into, from what I understand, and if she's correct, he's more into working with his faith and the people of that faith.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted
yeah,
to
Yeah, I think
that.
That's what he's doing.
That he's comfortable with. But, you know, I used to see Bobby all the time in person in Florida. He would come up to the house.
Yeah.
And then he just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I did see him a couple of times when we were wearing masks early on. But then beyond that point, I couldn't find him. So I figured it was either that he was really involved with his community in Miami or something had happened. And I'm glad to find out through Dr. Deborah that she's heard from him recently.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that he got he's hanging out more in New York, okay, which is a scary thing right now. But that's what I kind of like heard. So he goes, well, you know how he does. He goes from Florida up to New York. And makes the deliveries with the breads and all the other stuff. And then he goes back down Florida and stays there for a while. So he goes back and forth. I think he's gotten back into, you know, his faith that way. And look, whatever works for a person, then that's what that person needs. So that's good.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
that's what I have.
Go ahead, Bill.
About him. No, that's it. That's all.
Okay. So what would you suggest to people, Dr. Deborah, about speaking to their children? I mean, one thing we have here, this is what I make many, many copies of, and hand them out and post them if they'll let me, because you always have to ask permission first, you know, in stores. And this is a way to sort of like bring people into understanding child abuse, because maybe they can see things on this list. But I haven't done this in a long time, and I think it's a good idea, because we don't know who's listening on their computers right now, but to read the indicators of sexual abuse. And this is for the younger children. All right, the younger kids. They have sleep disturbances, bedwetting and or loss of fecal control, regressive behavior, self-destructive or risk-taking behavior. They become very impulsive. They're distracted, difficulty concentrating, refusal to be left alone, fear of an individual such as an alleged offender, fear of people of a specific type or gender, fire setting, cruelty to animals. Boy, that blew my mind when I first learned that. Cruelty to animals. Problems relating to peers, sudden changes in behavior, and difficulties in school, and inappropriate interest for their age in sexual things and in sexual, in sex in general. Now, that's for the younger kids, okay? That's for the younger kids. And I have seen children rub up against furniture because it stimulates them, because they're stimulated. And what people have to understand is God made our bodies a certain way, and we do respond to stimuli. But if you see a child who is too touchy-feely with themselves or whatever, chances are, there's a problem, okay? But that's for the younger set. Now, for the older set, like the teenagers, those who are prepubescent, but they have eating disturbances, bulimia or anorexia. They run away. I used to do that. Substance abuse, self-destructive behavior, suicide attempts, self-mutilation, incorrigibility, criminal activity, depression and social withdrawal, problems relating to peers. A lot of times they're too bashful, they're introverted, because they can't make eye contact. See, I went through all this. Sudden changes in behavior, anger issues, and then, of course, difficulty in school. Now, this is the type of thing, Bill, that I hang up, like in ShopRite, or I even had it hanging up in the post office, and they put it next to the the FBI people that they wanted to catch. It's funny, they put it right next to them, but that's okay.
Most
because
wanted.
A lot of them probably were, they're pedophiles, and so this is showing, you know, how kids can respond. So I hang that up. That's one of the most popular ones that I hang up, because people, you know, they don't like it when you shove it in their face or whatever. But if they're reading, and say they're in Walmart or they're in ShopRite, we have ShopRite out here, and they have a place where you can put, you know, a postcard, maybe it's for your own business or whatever, they allow for me to hang that up, what I just read.
That's good.
Sure. And then when people are standing there, maybe they want to buy a lawnmower or whatever, they see that and they go, wow, look at this. Hey, my little Jimmy, you know, he's acting like this. And maybe little Jimmy did a fire setting, or maybe he's getting nasty with animals, or problems relating to kids. Maybe he's getting into too many fights in school, you know, things like that. And so there's that list right there. They can put their cell phone up, take a picture up, and they'll have a list right in front of them. They can take it home. So, you see, there's all ways of reaching people. And I go into pizzerias. And I have a lot of cards. I have cards made up, too. And I go into pizzerias and places like that, and I ask them if I can leave cards about NASCAR. And we have a couple of things on our cards, you know, to look out for. and a couple stats and so forth. And certainly all about NASCA and Tekul. All right. So it's a way of promoting ourselves, but also bringing forth, again, awareness. And they allow for me to leave this paper. Some of the others, they wouldn't, but that's okay. This is a start right here. And then to go into daycare centers, people think their child is safe. And I'm talking to people out there right now who have children with a daycare center starting to open again. Every state is different. Pretty soon we might have another lockdown because of this next virus that's supposedly going to come through. I pray they're wrong. I think it's already started, though, in India. Now, maybe it'll reach its way over here. I don't know. But the point is this. Daycare centers, the directors, Dr. Deb, they need to teach their staff better, okay? I remember even back when we had Community Matters, Bill, there were several things at times about daycare centers where people were getting in trouble. Do you remember that?
Sure.
Yeah, those articles.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's what made me think to go into daycare centers, just by Community Matters. I think the community, working inside of our own communities, is one of the most best thing that any of us can do as survivors, because you see, if we can reach our communities, especially in the more cityfied areas, the more urban areas, if we can reach people there and handouts like I was just speaking about, the signs of child abuse, handing out cards, this will make people more aware. And statistics do show that every fifth house, it's now they've come to that conclusion, because I do a lot of reading and studying, but every fifth house, especially in an urban area, there's something going on in that house. It doesn't have to be sexual. It can be physical. In fact, many times it's more physical in those houses, not that sexual isn't right up there too. But so often there's so much physical violence going on, and the stats for that are actually a little bit higher. In the home, absolutely, especially. So these are things that people have to learn and to look out for. And if we could teach people, Dr. Deborah, not to always think about themselves. You know, somebody needs food down the street. Help the person out. If you have extra, for God's sake, give them something. If everybody would do that, if we would have that type of mentality, that we could be helping society, because that's what makes up society, is neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood. Right now we're living in a world where people just want power and they don't care. And yes, they're watching their backs. But normally speaking, and I was working with the homeless in New York City before the COVID hit. I was with a church group. It was a Methodist church group. They didn't care that I was Catholic. They just wanted me to work with them, and I certainly did. But they wouldn't go to the Bronx, okay? I had to laugh. Maybe the Bronx really needed them bad, okay? I'm not saying this in a negative way, but I understand people, and they were frightened. So they would stay around the Manhattan area, you know, up around Broadway, and there's three parks that they would go to. And I just want to share this little bit with you, and then I'll get back to you, too. One night, this guy pulled up in a very fancy car, and he looked like a fancy guy. And he wanted to know if we were the Midnight Express, okay? If we were the Midnight people. That's the way he put it, Midnight Express. Well, that's close to the name. But the point is this. We said, yes, we are. And he said, well, I just want to thank you, because 4 years ago, because they've been in operation for a long time, 4 years ago, I was homeless and I was hungry, and you people served this breakfast, and you also, and that wasn't me, I'm a night owl, so I was still sleeping, but I would do the midnight run, and you saved my life, and he took off. So you see, just that one little thing, it shows that when you're kindness, when you show kindness and caring towards people, it makes for a better society, and that's what we have to learn as a society, to do that. And it showed, too, that we were being effective, because we, before we went to New York, we would make sandwiches, and not chintzy ones either. We had a lot of money donated to the church. We were lucky. But we made, you know, turkey sandwiches with cheese, and it was a hefty sandwich, and then ham sandwiches with cheese, and then, yes, peanut butter and jelly, too much of which I had to eat at one time in my life. But still, no, gave them, you know, three choices. We had a huge vat of soup. We had, it was just the Ramon soup, but I bring in carrots, and I'd already cooked them, pre-cooked, and just throw them in to make it a little healthier. We had the juice, we had tea, we had coffee, we had hot chocolate because winter was coming. And then, of course, into early spring, that's when the COVID hit. So we had clothing that was brand new. It was from Walmart, but who cares? I go to Walmart. I'm not a fancy person, okay? And I don't have to have designer jeans and stuff. So, but they were brand new, still in packages. And toiletries, any kind of toiletry you can think of. And let me tell you something, there are scammers out there that hang with the homeless people. One way to tell a person is truly homeless is to look at their skin. If their skin is weathered, then you know that that person's been out there. So we would give them all kinds of creams to put on their skin. And you name it, they got it. Now, that was really, it was called the Midnight Run. That guy called it the Midnight Express. I thought it was funny. But it was called the Midnight Run. Now, they're not in operation because, from what I understand, though, DIFAS has taken that over, too. I just found this out. I'm really mad.
Hmm.
And they don't do what we do. There's nowhere, no way, okay. So I'm going to look into that. I'm going to look into that and see what went wrong with that. But there are other groups that I can join. I have no problems doing that. But this is what we as a people need to do. We have to start doing more for people. So what NASCA does here, and I want people to look at the NASCA website. That's NASCA.org, NASCA.org. And if you need information about anything, it's going to be on that website. And then we do have a contact list. And I'm the night owl. I'm up. I get calls sometimes 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And then I sleep a lot during the day. I have to. I have to sleep sometime. And but that's what we do. We take care of people. So what Dr. Deborah has here, the script conference, which is going to help educate people, and that's what we need so badly to do, to have these workshops, to educate people so that they can educate their children, so they can educate themselves, and we can educate our communities, and then maybe, just maybe, we can put a dent in the statistics of child abuse. And that's what I work so hard for.
I agree with you. I think that that is definitely important. And, you know, all of your stories are stories I've heard before. And it's like, that's why our theme this year is leadership. And my dog is barking. Sorry about that. But my theme this year is leadership. And it's it's being a leader and taking a stand and going and getting those clothes and putting them out there for people. And you know, looking at people's skin, paying attention. That's really how you know, is that you pay attention to things that are happening in your environment. And one of the things that we do at the script conference is that we draw attention to things. Bill's been on the panel. He comes and he always makes waves in whatever he says, and he draws attention to things. And that is why we do it. No, everybody's on a first-name basis. No one's above anyone else. And the environment is for everybody to feel like they can be heard. That is the thing about script that I am most proud of, is that anyone who you are, from the police chief to the person who has a son that may have been shot in violence, is there talking about the same issues and telling their own story.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. And you just said something right there that's very important. You see, if the police department, now they have like satellite type of people who work not on the department, but work with them. You have the guardian angels. We've had them on how many times now, Bill? 3 times, I think, something like that. And the guardian angels are people who go out and they patrol the neighborhoods, and they work with the kids. That's basically what they're trying to do, especially over in Easton. I know that for a fact because I've been there. I've been there quite a few times, and I'm proud of them. And so they also, too, though, work with Crime Watch, and they also work with Neighborhood Watch. That's the one that people mostly hear about is Neighborhood Watch. And so they work with the police department. You see, the police department in Easton will work with these other little organizations. I'm not belittling them. I don't mean little. Curtis would shoot me if you heard that. You know, he started that in 1979, the Guardian Angels, and now he's running for New York. Okay, he's running for mayor in New York. I like that. But anyway, the point is this. If we have these other organizations, because a lot of times kids are in a spot. Maybe they tell a parent, and the parent doesn't care. That's what happened to me. Okay? They didn't care. So no help there. And that's why I went down the route that I went in my life. Now, back then, there was no such thing as the Guardian Angels or Block Watch or Neighborhood Watch or Crime Watch. But today we do have those different organizations, and the police departments, the ones that do, all right, let them work with them to a certain degree, okay? There are boundaries. But if they do work together, then there's less crime. Now, I was shocked because the last time we had the Guardian Angels on, Bill, I looked up crime statistics. I looked up Phillipsburg, where I lived, remember? Well,
yeah.
Easton, well, we're a hub of that, actually, but Easton had less crime. Now, it's a city, small, but still a city. They had less crime than Phillipsburg, who didn't have all that help.
And
so
those
this
two
is
cities are
about.
A bridge apart. They're just across the river from each other, one in Pennsylvania, Easton, and the other in New Jersey.
Right.
So they're... But, you know, I was looking at the crime rates recently, and they are out there through the roof again.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on this so hard around when I had the community policing thing up and running and I was active in it. I'm trying to find a way to get back into it because it's needed again. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
the pace at which we have allowed crime to rise and rise and rise and rise and rise is incredible. And I say we, I'm also including the community because, you know, I am a leader. I'm a community builder. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And in various aspects of my life, I've done that with whether it's a set of clinics in the healthcare industry that I worked on or the neighborhood councils that I helped put together or the community policing at LAPD or you know, NASCA. They're all communities
mm-hmm.
that I keep building because I believe in community. But somebody has to be out there saying it, and we've stopped saying it. You know, we got Bratton to the point where he would say that it's not a program here, community policing. It's the philosophy of how we run our department. It's the philosophy, and that really
mm-hmm.
helped. And it was repeated over and over, and it became the philosophy. And you know, our crime rates went way down. And then they didn't stay there. They came back up over the last several years anyway. And it's astonishing that if you don't stay on top of it, you know, it's easy for it to slip away. And the officers to get disgruntled, they leave in droves. The police don't receive as many tips because the community is upset and they don't want to get involved. You know, there's lots of reasons that this happens, but we have to be saying it, because if you're not saying it, it's not in anybody's conscience. You know, that was 20 years ago, when I was doing LACP, when I first set it up, and nowadays people don't remember that. It's another generation, and we got to say it again and again and again and again. Blake Chow, by the way, is the deputy chief who's going to be on. At the Script Conference, sort of the leader of the LAPD group that'll be there. And he's somebody I know very well because he was on his way up. He was the captain at Hollenbeck Division where I was on the CPAB. So I know Blake very well. And he's an excellent guest, you know. So, again, I hope people won't miss the opportunity to come to the Script Conference and you know, and hear some of these themes. I don't know what other people are going to say. I don't know what I'm going to say. I might say what I just said, you know, but I don't know. Because it's, you know, it's not, you're allowed to participate however you want to participate, as Deborah said. And I, when I'm given that permission, I take it. I'm not shy.
That's right.
Bill, this year at Scripps, we're going to have a great panel because we're going to do one on Black Lives Matter. And we're going to be talking about, we're going to have like a Black Panther there, a representative from Black Lives Matter. And we're going to have three different pieces of law enforcement talking about this issue. And it was, I mean, it was difficult to get Black Lives Matter on the, at the table, let me tell you. And but
no,
I think it's going to be an amazing panel to talk about because there's so many intricacies to this. I mean, one of the things that we're going to be talking about is, like, people saying all lives matter. Yes, all lives matter. I get that. But to say that Black Lives, to say all lives matter, say that to the Black Lives Matter, you're forgetting why they're saying Black Lives Matter. And it's not that people are just counting either side, you know. So it's going to be a very, very, very interesting discussion, and I am excited to have it. And I know there's going to be a lot of people. I'm going to turn everybody's mics off so that they can't disrupt because I know that this one's going to be a hot topic for a lot of people who want to have a lot to say.
Right.
Well, it should. I mean, you know, the George Floyd situation, you know, it should have been plain to everybody. I don't know how you could miss it. You know, this and he's not the and his case is not the only one. There's been case after case after case around the country, frankly, that, you know, have been upsetting to people of color and to me. I mean, I'm not of color, but it's upsetting to me what's happening. And, you know, this is also part of why people don't trust police again, because they're seeing these incidents, most of which are white male officers on attacking basically young black males. And, you know, we see that over and over and over, and that's what the story becomes. But I mean, there's a lot of police departments, a lot of police that do it right, but they're not the ones that make the news. So people are upset, cops are upset, you know, and the community is suffering. That's just
yes,
what happens.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And to defund, though, the police department, right now we need more help than ever because they're saying,
no, they're not
they're
to
saying,
it.
I don't think they will, but they're trying
they
to
won't.
Some are.
But, we need police. We need something.
That's right. That's my point. Look, when I worked at detention center, there were cops there, okay? I wasn't a police officer. They wanted me to be, but I didn't want to be. So anyway, I was an officer of the court instead. We took kids to court to decide what their fate was going to be. Were they going to stay longer in detention? Were they going to go into a home? Or what was going to happen to them? So certainly not to send them back home, hopefully, because that's where they came from. But anyway, the point is, those police officers were great. Look, I don't care what institution or organization you speak about. You're going to have the good, the bad, and the ugly. Someone quoted me the other night, and that's the way it is, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the ugly is ugly. And what happened, I know what you're referring to. What happened? That guy was a murderer, that police officer. And he shouldn't even be in protective custody. Sorry, he had too many complaints against him before what happened. So we're not talking about a one-time thing. That was a terrible thing that happened. But then you have those that are already filled with anger. And an incident like that just brings it all on and brings it all out. But we're going to have something, Bill, and people better start listening and thinking. We might have a much bigger problem. Because now we've got China. Okay. And there might something big happen with that. And that's what I'm fearing. That's what I'm fearing. But and then watch the blacks and the whites come together then. Because we're going
to
have to beat up China. Okay. I'm serious. I hope it doesn't come to that, but that's the way it's looking right now.
Well, I was laughing, but I was saying, you know, that's too big of a problem for me to worry about. I can deal with L.A. That's a big problem right there, or the United States. That's a big problem right there. But I'll just mm-hmm. stay with that. You know, North America is big enough for me to try to tackle, for any of us to try to tackle, without worrying about what's happening in China. That's for some other group of people, I think.
Let's see what happens. The reason that we're not going to defund completely.
We're not going to do away with policing. We have to have policing. But what we also need
is
the thing you mentioned with the cop that committed murder. You know, he didn't have much accountability or transparency with all the things that had led up to that. And I think you could have picked him out as somebody that would be a problem on the street. So the police unions, meaning the rank and files unions, the line officer from the newest officer to through sergeants, basically, have a union. And then the officers, lieutenant and above, have another different group. But it's the line officers union that, you know, they won't allow this accountability and transparency. As much they put their heels in the dirt, you know, in every opportunity to stop it from going forward. And we have to be able to keep our officers accountable. They have to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's. You know, you let somebody get away with something, then they get away with something, then they get away with something bad. We're having a problem, you know, getting enough recruits again in the academy. And so people are leaving LAPD or retiring early. They retire at 20 years. Why wait till 30? You know, I don't want to work another 10 years under these situations. And it's not an attractive job. So the young recruits don't show up. They'd rather be a garbage man, you know, which is a good job. But
My son, thank you very much, waste management.
I know. That's why I said it. But they, you know, you could. There are lots of jobs out there for people who, can work. At the level of, say, someone who would be recruited into the police department, but they're not showing up at the academy. And you have to keep filling the academy at the same rate that you're losing officers who are retiring or leaving in order to keep the department just at the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's somewhere in the area of 9,000-something now, because they lost 1,000, I think. But anyway, these are some of the problems that you know. Then it's not; these are not easy problems to fix. You have to be able to talk to each other, you know, and not be yelling at each other.
Right.
And you know, but they're fixable. We did it before, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we can do it again. But we got it. It has to be a priority.
Well, I agree with you. Listen, there's nothing wrong. Look, even if you're a counselor at a facility like I was, every 2 years you're supposed to go and get recertified, actually. You don't have to go through the whole thing like you do the first time. But they ask you certain questions and you answer it real quick and then you get recertified. With police officers,
Michelle is back. I don't know if you saw that. She's waiting for you to call her, Michelle.
She's cooking. she's going to go away for some days. I don't want to bother her because she's leaving food behind for her husband. So she's in the middle of cooking all different kinds of meals. But anyway, I think she said what she wanted to say a little bit earlier, and then she listened for a while again. I was watching through the switchboard. She's busy. So anyway, the point is this. That I think there's nothing wrong in any institution or organization to go over the do's and don'ts, what you've learned for the last 5 years, you know, look back 5 years, what can you, you know, maybe do better, What can you take out? What can you put in? Maybe a little more training. There's nothing wrong with that. I go along with that, and they call it reform. Well, reform in the right way, though. Do not make them feel like they're bad people, because like we've said so many times before, and like you even hear on the TV set, especially with domestic violence, a cop goes and he has a call because of domestic violence. He doesn't know what he's going to find when he gets there. They could all be armed. All right? Police officers do put their lives in jeopardy. They absolutely do. And so they should be respected. If they do something wrong, just like anyone else, they go to jail. Absolutely. And they're going to have trouble in jail anyway because they're a cop. So they're not going to be liked. All right? So, you know, justice a lot of times happens on the inside more than even on the outside. So I don't believe, I mean, they're supposed to be like, we're supposed to be able to look up to police officers. And quite frankly, because I personally have never had any problems with police officers, I do look up with them. I had friends that were police officers. And a couple of them have died since, so they're gone. But the point is this. If you do your job well, you don't do something stupid like that officer did. No, no, no. But not all officers should be judged.
It's not just the one officer.
Right.
There's four of them. I mean, I can't believe
it. Well, yeah, right, the four of them. Well, the others were rookies.
I mean, somebody should have knocked him off, the guy, and rolled him over.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%, and I have such a temper in me at times that I would have been the one that would have done it.
Yeah.
But the point to me is this is still the man that did it, all right? And there was a lot of people standing around. Of course, they're afraid to, touch a cop. They're not going to do that. I don't expect them to. But the point is this. What he did should not be held against all of police. That's not right either, because there are those police that go into the line of duty every day, and some of them don't come back because they did get shot and killed in the line of duty.
People are aware of the fact that it's not just George Floyd and that group of officers. It's all over the place. And it's mostly, as they say, white male officers against, taking it out on, frankly, black youth, male youth. And it happens over and over and over. And a lot of the cases are not explainable. I don't think you could explain George Floyd. He didn't do enough to be thrown down on the ground. And, this is the case over and over and over. If someone runs away, and just because they're running, you don't shoot them in the back.
No, you
know?
Don't.
And there's lots of these instances, and now many of them are on tape because everybody has a cell phone with a camera in it. But there is training. I just want you to know there is ongoing training. It may be that there are some diversity courses, some kind of sensitivity courses, some kind of, de-escalation courses that need to be adjusted, but they already are taught. And you're not expected to go to the academy one time and be totally trained the rest of your career. No, you go back. And some of the courses are kind of full-time courses for a little while. Some of them are part-time courses, like maybe at roll call. They'll teach something at roll call for a couple of days, and that's the way they spread the news that there's been a change in policy, for example. This does continue. But does it continue in the right way? Is it enough? That's different than saying, get rid of the police. It's make them stand up straighter. Yeah, I agree with that. they call it accountability, and transparency is our ability to see in, so that they're not hiding what they're doing.
When I see a police officer, I expect certain conduct from that police officer. And if he turns out to be a bad cop, then I'm pissed. I get really, really mad. Because I've worked with them, and I was a part of that. and so forth. They even used me down the park to help bust drug addicts. I was one of those people they planted. Nice. But anyway, the point is this. I expect a certain type of conduct from a police officer. And I think we all do. Now, we do know that there are bad ones. Absolutely. But I do know that there are far more good ones. And if your house gets broken into, who do you call? You call the cops. Unless you're a part of a gang and you think maybe your gang member, friend, and foe is maybe with someone that broke into your house. There's a lot of justice going on that way, too. But most of society calls the police department.
I don't want people thinking what you're saying, because people of color won't call the police. It has nothing to do with being in a gang. I understand that, but it has nothing to do with you being in a gang. It has to do with fitting in. It has to do with not being the stereotype. It has to do with fear. It has to do with all kinds of things that may be external to what other people's world views are. So people who don't have those external world views are you know, don't understand it. But a lot of people of color, if their house is broken into, will not call the police, and it may not be a gang. It may not be anyone they know. It could be something that's been targeting them for 2 weeks, because that's what criminals do, is they target you and they watch your patterns before they go and rob your house.
Right.
You know? So I don't want people thinking people who don't call is because they're in a gang, and that is not the case. I personally, if someone broke into my house, would think about that, and I am so far from it. Because of a person of color, you try to avoid the police as much as possible. And
I've been broken into two times in Phillipsburg, okay? And before that in Dover, I was a landlady there. I was broken into twice, and I immediately called the police. You know, I will do that. But we do have black and we do have white police officers. And I think it's a matter of people, you know, I don't want people to get the wrong idea of the police department to the point where they won't even use them if they need them.
But it has nothing to do with the police. The reason you don't call, the police are external. They're a middleman to the whole system that's systemic. So say you call the police and they're fair with you. Then you get in the system and you have other people who are not, because that is a pattern within our criminal justice system. So you don't want to get stuck in there. It has nothing to do with just the police. It's a bigger issue, a huge bigger issue than just being afraid of calling the police. I just don't want people to get that idea out there that they're not calling because they're in a gang. I just don't want people thinking that.
What I meant by that,
yeah,
Deborah,
you know what? I don't hear that as an issue either, Deborah. You know what? Our department now really represents sort of the closer and closer, frankly, over the last 20 years, the diversity of the community. And we have people of every persuasion at LAPD, and male and female at LAPD. And, you know, we have some assigned to certain communities because we speak so many languages. And we're able to have an officership that kind of, it's coming closer and closer all the time. You're reflecting the community. So there's a bunch of black officers, there's a bunch of Asian officers, there's a bunch of female officers, so forth. And there's still a bunch of white officers, but they represent sort of the percentage of the community that they represent. You know, that helps a lot. But it's not a panacea. It doesn't fix it. Because every officer that goes out there can be seen and often is seen not by the color of their skin, but by the color of their uniform. Oh, they're blue.
Right.
So it's like us against them. You know, the blue guys are behind the eight ball in some instances. But I like what Deborah said. Even if they treat you fairly, you know that down the road, you know, you might not be treated fairly in the jail system. You might not be treated fairly in the justice system. You might not be treated fairly in the penal system. And you might not ever be able to get out, because the recidivism is so, you know, extraordinary.
And once you're in it, you know, it's hard to get out. You're more likely to go back.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if you go back to the same environment.
Well, that's what
if you
saying.
Do
that's
get
why
out.
Change has to happen. That's what Deborah's mm-hmm. saying. This is a mm-hmm. systemic problem. You can't fix
yeah.
one piece of it and say, well, thank God we dealt with policing. No. There's a whole gamut of things, whole array of things that that we have to work on if we really want to improve the community. Policing is about the community cooperating with the police, but the police cooperating with the community and having a relationship mm-hmm. and blah, blah, blah. It's a relationship. And
right.
we don't feel we have
exactly.
a relationship. It's us against them too much.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'll shut up. Sorry, Deborah, I took too
okay.
much of your show.
No, you're good. You're good.
No, I don't know. I don't know if she quite understood what I meant by that. That you would, if I know gangs, okay, and I'm just saying that maybe they thought it was a foe. In other words, one of their people that are against them that they fight. That's a different situation. But people, for God's sake, I don't care what color you are. I don't care if you're Asian. I don't care if you're white. I don't care if you're black. I don't care what you are. There's, if you're in trouble, you call the cops. That's what they're there for. That's all.
We only have 4 minutes, and I promised someone that I would say something
yeah.
because most of you don't know this, but I've been going to Texas and seeing my favorite relative who now has dementia, and I had hired her some house cleaners that make my life sane. And I said that I would give them a shout-out to thank them next time I was on the radio. So I just wanted to do that for Ready Made because they really do help people with dementia, and they also take a look out for her. And so I just wanted to say thank you to them. And if you want to contact them and you have someone, your loved one who is doing that, you know, please, please, please reach out to them. You can contact them at 979-219-3347, and it's Maids Cleaning Service, and they're in San Angelo, Texas, but I am sure they will come to you and provide the service because they are definitely one of a kind, Roderick and his wife. So I just wanted to give them that shout-out because I promised that I would.
Okay, well, there you go. You did it.
They
and
must
that's
be fabulous.
Good. You know what? They deserve it. They deserve it.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. They absolutely
must be fabulous to then keep your life clean, Deborah.
Uh-huh.
They must be fabulous.
We need our people who clean, okay? And listen here, and I don't mean anything by what you just said, Bill. Garbage men, many times, I give them tips if I can catch them, if I'm up early enough, all right? Because if we didn't have our garbage men, we would have plagues. We have plagues now, but, I mean, we would have plagues. Look what happens if you don't have garbage men. And they're not looked at.
I said that because I know your son is in the waste management business, so
yeah.
That's why I said that.
And you know what? But I'm
but,
saying
you know,
that
he'll
generally.
Be a plumber. Plumbers make great money, too. There's lots of opportunities you could take
mm-hmm.
other than law enforcement, and a lot of them are taking it. Or they're going
mm-hmm.
to a place where there's not as much problem. So they, instead of going to LAPD, they go to, Mesa, Arizona, you know?
Right.
It's a far more laid-back community, you know? So, anyway.
There you go. Hey, listen, I got the 60-second. This went fast, this show, very fast. So, anyway,
right,
we had a good topic.
I'm putting the information on the front page of the website. Now, because the script conference is 2 weekends from now, and and all the information will be on the front page of the website, okay?
Thank you so
and
much.
I hope people do attend. You bet.
All right, listen, Dr. Deborah, we love you, okay? Have a wonderful script conference. You know, and, it was a good show. We covered a lot of topics, and that's important. That's what's important. So, anyway, good night. God bless.
Nice.
And we'll talk soon, okay? Good night now.
I love to Bob. Give my love to Bob.
I will. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
Log Talk Radio.